with the footage of the school candlelight vigil. I'm pretty sure that was you.
That's impossible, Sheena said. I wasn't at school then. I was a newlywed when Karina died.
It was someone who looked a lot like you then. She had that glittery pink manicure.
Lots of women in Southall have those, Sheena said.
It was you. We both know it. You were wearing that necklace with the letter G pendant. Sheena winced as though Nicky had jabbed her. She only recovered after adjusting the collar of her blouse to conceal the fine gold chain.
What for, Nicky? What do you want to know? Because if you're just plain curious, I'm not here to indulge you. This community's problems are real. This isn't for entertainment. What's it to you, then? Sheena pressed.
It's my community, too, Nicky said. I don't live here, but I'm part of it now. In my entire life, I have never felt so frustrated, amused, loved, and bewildered as I have in these past 2 months. But there seem to be layers of things going on that I'm not allowed to know about. She sighed and looked away. I'm not so naive to think that I can help, but I'd like to be aware of what's happening.
Sheena's face softened. A speck of afternoon sunlight peeped through the clouds and deepened the orange of her hennaed hair.
Nicky was unwilling to drop her gaze, even when Sheena looked past her, deep in thought.
Let's go for a drive, she finally said.
Nicky followed her round to the car park and Sheena's little red Fiat. Sheena put her key in the ignition. A Bhangra tune poured from the speakers. They said nothing to each other on the drive, which took them past rows of bone-white houses. The road curved out and the houses disappeared behind them, replaced by parkland. Sheena slowed down on a gravelly road that opened out onto a small lake. The sun glinted on the water.
The girl you saw in the documentary was Gulshan Kaur. She was one of my best friends, Sheena said. She died in a hit-and-run accident not far from here. The driver never came forward.
I'm so sorry, Nicky said.
Her mother gave me her birth necklace after she died. I didn't want to accept it at first, but she insisted. There's a superstition about keeping a deceased woman's gold in her own home. It brings bad luck. Most people decide to sell or reshape their gold, but Gulshan's mother insisted that I have it. I've worn it every day since her death.
You touch it sometimes, Nicky said, like you're remembering her.
If Gulshan were alive today, we'd see each other every day, Sheena said. She'd still be my friend, even though those other women distanced themselves from me and thought I was bad luck after Arjun's cancer. She cared about the truth. That's what killed her.
What do you mean?
Sheena took in a quivering breath. Karina was Gulshan's cousin. Gulshan and I were a few years older than her, so whenever she mentioned her cousin Karina, I just knew her as the lively girl that Gulshan played older sister to.
Karina was rebellious. She got suspended from school for selling cigarettes to younger kids once, and she sneaked out to meet boys. Gulshan used to counsel her. Karina's father was highly respected in the community, and each time Karina did something bad, people muttered, "What's wrong with that girl? She comes from such a good family, there's no excuse." Gulshan knew the truth, though. Karina's father drank heavily. He did it behind closed doors. A few times, Karina showed Gulshan the bruises she had from her father's beatings.
"What was Karina's mother like?" Nicky asked.
"Not around. This was part of the reason Karina's father was so strict. He had no idea how to control a daughter. She was punished for every little thing, and the beatings became more frequent. He pressured her to leave school and marry an older man in India. One day, Gulshan got a call from Karina from a payphone. She said she was running away with her boyfriend and that she would call again once she was safe. Gulshan tried to talk Karina out of it, but Karina said, 'It's too late. If I go home now, my father will murder me.' Gulshan didn't tell anybody that Karina had called her, but a few days later, somebody managed to track her down. A bounty hunter, I'm guessing, Nicky said.
Yeah. A taxi driver was after the reward money.
He found her miles away, in Derby. Imagine that, Nikki. She got that far away, and the community still managed to find her.
Sheena choked on these last words.
She was sent home? Nikki asked softly.
Sheena nodded. She took a tissue out from her purse and dabbed the corners of her eyes.
After Karina returned, Gulshan didn't hear from her. Gulshan's parents warned her to stay out of it, but one day she broke down and said, Sheena, something terrible is going to happen to my little cousin. She's going to die. Even I struggled to believe it at first. Karina's father had started a charity drive for newcomers to the country. He had come to my family's assistance when we first arrived in England. He had helped to fill out all the paperwork, tax forms, employment, everything. I reminded Gulshan that young girls have a tendency to exaggerate. I was sure this man wouldn't kill his daughter. Karina was probably on her way to India to get married to save the family's honour. Then I turned on the news one night, and Karina had been reported missing to the police. It was her father who reported her missing. That's when it hit me.
Sheena paused. In the quiet, the sound of another car could be heard making its way down the gravel path. It pulled up near them, and a family with two children emerged and made their way across the field. Sheena stared past them and continued.
If her father was telling the police that she had disappeared, then he knew that she wasn't coming back. A few days later, her body was found in the wooded area near Herbert Park. That was a frightening time for the community. Everybody shut their daughters away at home, convinced that a killer was on the loose.
But Gulshan suspected the father of murdering her, Nikki said. A sense of dread crept into her body.
Yeah, Sheena said. She didn't know for sure. But after the fuss was over and the media went away, she started asking her own questions. Wasn't it strange that Karina's father had reported her missing to the police, but had kept things quiet the first time she ran away? Why hadn't he hired another bounty hunter? He must have known that she was dead. Then one day, Gulshan called me up. She was very excited. She said, Sheena, there's proof now. She'd gone with her parents to Karina's house to pay their respects at a prayer session. She'd managed to sneak away to Karina's room, which she searched until she found a diary. There were entries detailing Karina's worst fears, that her father would murder her to save his reputation. Gulshan couldn't take the diary out of Karina's house without being noticed, so she put it back where she found it. She thought it would be safer to call the police and tell them to search the room. But then, Sheena bit her lip.
The accident, Nikki said. Gulshan died before she could contact the police.
She closed her eyes, as if momentarily shutting off the world would ease the injustices of Karina and Gulshan's story.
Somebody must have told Karina's father about the questions Gulshan was asking about her seeing the diary, Sheena said. The diary was never found.
Who else did Gulshan tell about the diary?
She told me, Sheena said softly.
And I told my mother-in-law. It was the early days of my marriage and we were bonding. I didn't think anything of it. Likewise, she didn't see the harm in telling a friend who told another friend.
Sheena shook her head, her words catching again.
Out of a sense of duty, somebody felt it necessary to stop Gulshan. Stop her before she embarrassed the community, before she made us look like a group of barbarians who killed their own daughters.
Oh, Sheena, Nikki said. I'm so sorry.
Me too,
Sheena whispered.
Sheena's secret hung heavy in the air. They both stared straight ahead, watching the lake shimmer and ripple like a jewel.
A breeze ran through the surrounding parkland, turning up blades of grass, revealing their dark underside. London's buildings were mere outlines in the distance.
Do you come to this spot often? Nikki asked.
Sheena stared out of the window.
All the time.
Gulshan didn't live far away and she went jogging here 3 times a week. She had to put up with comments, you know, Punjabi girl running around bare-legged.
The driver of the car would have known where to find her then, Nikki said.
Exactly. After Gulshan died, I visited the scene of the accident and saw how the road curved. There's a blind spot. The council petitioned to have a sign put up to warn pedestrians after the accident. Perhaps she had her earphones in and wasn't paying attention. You try to tell yourself it could just be an accident, that the simplest explanation is the most likely.
Maybe that's all it was, Nikki offered. An accident.
The coincidence nagged her immediately. She could only imagine the struggle this created within Sheena.
I won't ever know for sure, Sheena said, but in this community I'm suspicious of accidents.
A few years later, Karina's father was hospitalised with liver cirrhosis. I heard from people in the community that he was in great pain and I thought, serves him right. He had stopped hiding his drinking. People blamed Karina's death. They called him a broken man, a mourning father. I didn't have an ounce of sympathy for him. At his funeral, I wore Gulshan's necklace for the first time. People stared, but they said nothing. They all knew. Nikki could practically feel the burn of those stares.
You're very brave for doing that, she said.
With one hand, Sheena rolled her pendant between her thumb and forefinger. She shrugged.
It was just a small gesture. I'm sure nobody even remembered afterwards.
They probably did.
Or they didn't, Sheena said.
The force in her tone surprised Nikki. Perhaps Sheena felt responsible for Gulshan's death in the first place. Nikki said nothing else, waiting for the tension to leak away.
Let's head back, Sheena said.
She twisted the key into the ignition and backed out of the park. The radio came on, and an old Hindi love ballad filled the car. As they gained distance from that lonely park, Sheena seemed to relax. She hummed along with the song.
You know this song? Sheena asked as the singer reached his chorus.
My mum would know it, Nikki said.
Oh, definitely. It's a classic.
Sheena turned up the radio.
You can actually hear the sorrow in his voice.
They listened to the singer, crooning about his heavy heart and his longing. Nikki had to admit that the tune touched a nerve. The streets of Southall came into view, the ballad providing a soundtrack to the passing rows of jewellery shops and jalebi stands. Despite the sinister story that Sheena had just told, Nikki could understand how this place could become home, and why leaving it would be unimaginable to some. They were pulling into the bank's car park when Sheena muttered,
Shit.
Her eyes were trained on a figure in the distance.
Is that Rahul?
Nikki asked, squinting. Sheena nodded. She parked in the farthest spot from the entrance and turned off the engine, but made no move to leave the car.
I'll wait till he goes back inside, she said. When are you going to stop avoiding each other in public?
Nikki asked. At the moment, we're avoiding each other in private as well, Sheena said.
Why? What happened?
Sheena twisted the keys in the ignition. The engine purred, and a tune floated from the radio.
We started becoming quite physical with each other.
And?
It's all happening too quickly. My husband courted me for months before we even held hands. With Rahul, I went from kissing on a cheek to the most intimate level within 2 dates.
I'm sure things are fast-paced now because you're passionate about each other and it's new. Besides, you're not inexperienced anymore. You can't compare romance at this stage in your life to your first marriage 14 years ago.
I know that, Sheena said, but I miss the thrill, the build-up.
You should try discussing it with Rahul.
Discussions won't work. I can tell you these things, but I can't talk to him about it.
Try it. Sheena sighed.
I told him last night that we need some distance. He's managed to stay out of my way all morning. I don't want to cross paths with him now, or he'll think it's some silly game like I'm playing hard to get.
Sheena suddenly gasped and ducked. Her movement startled Nikki.
He's coming this way, Sheena hissed. Rahul was indeed advancing on the car. All of a sudden, Sheena became very busy. She fiddled with the radio tuner and leaned over Nikki to open the glove box and search through a mess of old parking tickets. Rahul knocked on the window. Sheena rolled down the window.
"Oh, hello,"
she said breezily. "Hi," Rahul said. "Is everything okay?"
Yeah, Sheena said. "We're in the middle of a conversation, so if you don't mind excusing us."
"Sure. I noticed your car parked here, but the lights were on, so I was checking to see if there was anyone inside. I was afraid your battery would die."
"Thank you," Sheena said. "We're fine here."
The high colour in Sheena's cheeks indicated that she was anything but fine. "Okay," Rahul said. They watched him walk away, and when he entered the bank, Sheena let out a huff of air.
"Do you think I did a good job of playing cool? I don't know. Oh, he's thrown me off now."
She flapped her hands at her cheeks.
"Oh, now I'm going to be late returning to work because I can't walk in there all flushed like this."
"I shouldn't have taken up so much of your time," Nikki said, glancing at the clock on Sheena's dashboard. "I'm not sure what I was expecting, marching into the bank and thinking we'd just chat over the counter about it." Sheena continued fanning herself. It looked as if she were waving away Nikki's apology. "You weren't expecting a complicated story. Nobody does. If a girl is killed, it's unimaginable that her loved ones would have a hand in it. People don't consider it, unless they know what goes on in this community." "I thought I was well aware," Nikki mused. "When Dharampal told me about Maya's suicide, I was shocked. But then I remembered that honour was a big deal in this community. I didn't think there was more to it." Here Nikki's voice trailed off. "Maya's suicide." Out loud in this small space, the words were jarring. A dreadful question began to form in her mind. Clearly, Sheena noticed. She abruptly stopped fussing over her face and dropped her hands into her lap. In the heavy silence that followed, Nikki summoned the courage to ask her question. "Did Maya really commit suicide?" Sheena's reply was unexpectedly swift.
"Do you think she'd do something like that?"
"I didn't know her," Nikki said. The impatience in Sheena's sigh was noticeable.
"Come on, Nikki. A modern girl leaving a note confessing to her sins and ruining the family's honour. Maya was too westernised to have such concerns."
Dharampal had not mentioned a note. Her version of events had made the incident sound more spontaneous. Jaggi's threats of divorce sending Maya into an immediate panic.
"Who wrote the suicide note then?" Nikki asked.
"Probably the person who killed her."
"You're not suggesting..."
Nikki felt her legs growing cold from the shock.
"Jaggi? Because of the affair?"
"If there was an affair, but who knows?" Sheena said. "Jaggi was the jealous sort. Dharampal didn't help things by spying on Maya and assuming that every smile she gave a man meant that she was sleeping with him. She meddled in their marriage."
"There was no police investigation. How is that possible?"
Sheena shrugged.
"I know that Kulwinda tried talking to the police once, but they didn't believe there was any evidence of foul play."
"So they just closed the case?" Nikki asked. "There were testimonies. Some of Juggy's friends' wives reported that Maya had been considering suicide for a while. They made it sound like they were really tight, a social club of wives. But I can tell you that Maya hardly spoke to them. She had friends of her own."
"And where were they?" Nikki demanded. "Why didn't they come forward?"
"Fear, I guess," Sheena said. "Everybody's too afraid to fight for Maya. The risks are too high, and nobody knows for sure if anything suspicious really happened. Even Kulwinda avoids the police now. I see her taking the long route from the market sometimes, so she won't have to pass the station. Somebody probably warned her not to rock the boat."
A chill passed through Nikki. She had brazenly entered the home where a murder may have taken place. A planned one. "Dharampal wasn't there when it happened, was she?"
"No. I remember seeing her at a temple program that night. But Kulwinda has never forgiven her."
Turrenpal told the police that Maya had threatened to burn down the whole house the night before her death.
Sheena rolled her eyes. If Maya ever said such a thing, I'm sure it was taken out of context. Turrenpal's testimony made Maya sound like an agonized wife from a Hindi movie.
Unstable, Turrenpal had repeated. And it made the suicide seem more plausible.
Yes, Sheena said. Turrenpal's loyalties are with that boy, 100%.
The son Turrenpal always wanted. Nikki shook her head.
This is so twisted, messed up, Sheena offered. Now you see why I warned you about prying. It's dangerous.
Nikki understood, but she still didn't want to back away.
What about the note? Was it in Maya's handwriting?
It must have been close enough. The police were convinced it was a suicide note. They told Kulwinder the words were smudged, like Maya had been crying.
A good detail, Nikki said dryly. Sounds like they were eager to latch onto any scrap of evidence that suggested suicide. No messy investigations, no can of worms to open.
Poor Kulwinder.
I suppose so. Kulwinder didn't have a chance of getting into Turrenpal's home, let alone searching it for a sample of Maya's handwriting.
Nikki dropped her head to her hands.
It's sickening, Sheena, she said. We're sitting here, almost certain that an innocent woman was murdered.
But there's no way to prove it, Sheena said. Remember that, Nikki. Don't try to be a hero here. It doesn't work.
Before stepping out of the car, Sheena adjusted her collar in such a way that it swallowed her pendant and made it disappear.
Chapter 11 Geeta was gesticulating wildly. Her henna-dyed beehive quivered from the force of her movements.
Then they told him his shoes were too muddy to enter their country. Can you believe these people? Luckily, Nikki and Mindy don't have to travel anywhere for work. These customs officials can be so fussy.
I thought customs in Australia were strict about muddy shoes from overseas because of foreign soil particles mixing with theirs, Harpreet said, ignoring Geeta's subtle jibe at her daughters, whose unimportant jobs didn't take them overseas.
Leh, foreign soil. What's so foreign about Britain's soil? No, I'm telling you, these people were giving him a hard time because they thought he was Muslim.
Having already invited herself to Harpreet's home for tea, Geeta was pleased to have an audience for her grievances. Her intentions of boasting were never subtle. In the past 10 minutes, she had mentioned her son's trip to Sydney no less than 4 times. Harpreet wished she had gone to the temple yesterday. She'd avoided it, because she knew Geeta was an avid attendee of all Enfield's Gurdwara's weekly programs. Then she ran into her in the Sainsbury's car park. She checked the clock. Still at least an hour before Mindy would finish her hospital shift and return home.
Suresh said Sydney is very much like London,
Geeta tried again.
What was he doing there?
Harpreet asked.
His company sent him there for a conference, all expenses paid. They even flew him on business class. He said, Mamiji, only the bosses fly on business class. There must be some mistake. Nowadays, there are so many budget cuts that even the CEOs are flying in economy. But they said, no, no, there's been no mistake. All part of the company perks.
That's very nice, Harpreet said.
She had no news of her children to boast of. Mindy remained unmarried and Nikki... Well, Nikki had not said anything about her Southall job since starting. Earlier this afternoon, Nikki had brought the box of sweets and then hurried off, claiming to have some appointment, just as Harpreet was about to ask her again about how her job was going and what exactly she was planning to do with it. Harpreet got the vague sense that the job was not a subject Nikki wanted to discuss, which likely meant she had quit, just like she quit university. Geeta responded to Harpreet's silence with a look of pity.
Oh, children will do as they please, she said generously.
Not your children, Harpreet thought. But then, who wanted sons like Geeta's, grown men who still called her mummy?
How is your yoga class going?
Harpreet asked to change the subject.
Good, good, Auntie Geeta said, improving my blood flow. We need this kind of exercise. The teacher is a very lean woman, but she's in her 50s. She says she's been practicing for only a few years, but she's gained a lot of flexibility. Ah, yoga gives you a lot of strength. You should join us on Tuesday evenings.
Harpreet could think of nothing worse than attending a yoga class with Geeta and her gaggle of friends, who spent more time backwards boasting than downward dogging.
Personally, I prefer the gym.
You joined a gym?
A few weeks ago, Harpreet said.
I just brisk walk on the treadmill and ride the stationary bike sometimes. I like going in the mornings. It gives me more energy.
Energy for what? Geeta asked. At our age, we should be slowing down.
Disapproval clung to her words.
Everybody is different, Harpreet said.
Leaning forward to pick up a piece of laddu, Geeta's kameez dipped forward, revealing a deep line of cleavage.
What I like about yoga is that it's all women. Is your gym unisex?
Harpreet's face burned. She was trapped into answering Geeta's question. So what if there were men at her gym?
Yes, she said.
Come to yoga, Geeta said.
It was a reprimand.
There are other women like us there, she added.
Ah, women like us,
Harpreet said vaguely. If a uniform and a code of conduct could be issued to Punjabi women over the age of 50, Geeta would have designed it.
How is Mindy doing? Geeta asked.
She's well, working today.
Found anybody yet?
I'm not sure, Harpreet said.
This would be the default answer until Mindy was ready to get engaged. The truth was, Mindy had been seeing someone, but she hadn't mentioned him lately. Harpreet was afraid to ask. On the one hand, she wanted Mindy to find someone and settle down, but it meant returning each evening to an empty home, and Harpreet wasn't ready for that.
She'd better find somebody quickly, nah? If she spends all this time looking and comes up empty, it looks bad.
She'll find someone, Harpreet said. There's no use pressurizing the girl. She can think for herself.
Of course she will, Geeta murmured.
Harpreet poured the last of her pot of chai into Geeta's cup. Black specks of Lipton leaves dotted the surface.
Come, I'll filter them out, she said, taking the cup from Geeta's hand.
In the kitchen, she searched for her sieve and remembered having to throw away the one her mother had given her to take to England after Nikki and Mindy used it to scoop their goldfish out of its tank. She felt a pang of sadness. What was home without her family? Geeta was brushing crumbs off her lips when Harpreet returned.
No sugar, please, she said,
with the nobility of a dieter. But no combination of yoga poses would eliminate those laddu calories, Harpreet thought with smug satisfaction.
Now tell me, Geeta said after taking a sip of tea. Have you heard about these stories?
What stories?
The stories, Geeta said.
Harpreet found it difficult to mask her irritation. Why did people prefer repeating rather than explaining themselves?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Geeta set her cup on its saucer.
The stories that have been passed around the entire Punjabi community of London. When Mittu Kaur told me about them, I laughed and didn't believe her. Then she brought one of the stories to my house. She said that she had read it aloud to her husband, and after that...
She shook her head.
Well, people get affected by these things.
She stared at Harpreet as if this would help her absorb her point.
They had sex on her sofa, Geeta whispered. What? She told you this? I was surprised as you are, but the story was very involving.
What's the book called? Harpreet asked.
It's not a book, Geeta said. They're just typed up stories. Nobody knows exactly where they're coming from.
What do you mean? The author's anonymous.
Supposedly, there's no single author. These stories haven't been published anywhere. They're just being copied, scanned, emailed, and faxed all over London. And they're reaching an intended audience. Mittu Kaur has read three already, and all three have completely transformed her relations with her husband.
During yoga class the other day, when the teacher asked us to lie on our backs,
and pull our knees to our chests, Mittu winked at me and said, just like last night. At our age, can you imagine?
No, Harpreet said quickly, I can't. She was imagining, though. She was picturing herself with Mohan.
Did Mittu tell you where she got the stories from?
Her cousin passed them to her. Her cousin got them from a friend at the Enfield Temple, who first heard about them from a Punjabi colleague who lives in East London. She lost the trail there because her cousin never asked the colleague where the stories came from. But Mittu Kaur isn't the only person I know who has come across these stories. Kareem Singh's wife told me she's come across them as well. The one she told me about was very graphic. A Punjabi woman brings her car to a mechanic and they end up having sex on the bonnet. She ties his wrists to the wing mirror with her dupatta.
They're that detailed? Harpreet asked. I've never come across stories like that with our people in them.
Rumour has it the stories are coming from Southall.
That's ridiculous, Harpreet said with a laugh. I'd believe it if you said they were from Bombay, but if they're from England, they're not from there.
No, it's true. Her aunt has a friend who attended a class there on how to write dirty stories.
That made no sense.
There would be riots in the community if such a thing existed, Harpreet said.
That's why it's advertised as an English class.
That's
Harpreet froze. Southall, English class. Harpreet swallowed and kept quiet. She reminded herself that Geeta was a gossip. Geeta exaggerated. There was no reason to think.
You know what else she told me? The stories are being written by older women whose husbands have died. Can you imagine? Women like us.
Ah, Harpreet croaked. She took a gulp of tea.
Women like us.
By the time Nikki got to Southall Station the next day, she was grumbling under her breath. The train had been delayed, and she was running so late that there wasn't even time for that cigarette she badly craved. Bloody Jason and his plan for them to quit together. The bus dutifully climbed the hill and descended slowly onto the Broadway. Vegetable peels littered the ground outside the market, and sequins twinkled like constellations in the sari shop windows. A couple emerged from the steps of fast-track visa service, clutching papers against their chests. As the bus pulled up to the temple, Nikki checked the time on her phone. Class had started half an hour ago. A humming noise was coming from the community center building. Nikki climbed the stairs. The noise grew. Distinct voices, Arvinda's and Sheena's, could be heard over an ocean of excited chatter. Nikki walked into the room and gasped. There were women everywhere, sitting cross-legged on tables, nestled comfortably in chairs, leaning against the walls, perched on the teacher's desk at the front of the room. Nikki was speechless. She stepped back and stared at the women, unable at first to take in what she was seeing. There were many widows, distinct in their white attire, but clusters of women from other age groups had joined the classes as well. The presence of younger women was chaotic, the clink of bangles, the clouds of perfume. The voices of the middle-aged women rang out with an enviable certainty. It was the widows who noticed her first. One by one, they pulled away from their conversation and focused on Nikki. The noise bled from the room gradually until Nikki was facing a completely quiet group of women. She felt the sudden need for air and wondered if she had been holding her breath this whole time.
Is that the teacher?
One woman asked.
No, the classes are run by a Gori. What Gori can speak Punjabi? Another woman asked. No, it must be her.
The chatter commenced again, voices bouncing across the walls. Nikki stepped through the crowds and found Sheena.
When did they all show up?
Nikki asked.
The first ones were standing outside the building about an hour ago. I noticed them from the langar hall and hurried over to tell them that the classes hadn't started yet. They said, that's all right, we're waiting for the others. Then another crowd arrived, Sheena said.
When you said that the stories had spread all over London, Nicky said, looking around, I didn't think there would be this many women either, Sheena said. But we couldn't turn them away. But what will we do when Clorinda returns?
We can make up a roster, Sheena said. The women can sign up for sessions.
Or we can start our own classes in our areas,
a woman sitting nearby called out.
Anyone else here live in the Wembley area?
A few hands shot up. Oh, shit, Nicky thought. If the stories were spreading, they'd probably reached Enfield as well. She did a quick scan for Mum's friends and saw nobody that she recognised.
Everybody listen,
Nicky shouted. The women were momentarily stunned into silence. Nicky rushed to maintain the pause.
Welcome to all of you. I want to thank you for coming tonight. I wasn't expecting such a large turnout, and we'll need to put a limit on class sizes in the future.
She looked around the room.
I also want to emphasise the need to be discreet, although I'm not sure if it's realistic.
Her heartbeat quickened at the thought of the brothers discovering them.
We could be in a lot of trouble if the wrong people find out about these classes.
Quick glances darted about the room. Nicky's heart sank.
They already know, don't they? She asked.
From a back corner, Preetham raised her hand.
Derminda here said she found out about the classes because one of the brothers came knocking on her door, asking if she knew anything about the stories.
Derminda, a stout widow whose low dupatta hung over her eyes, nodded.
Yes, if anything, they're the ones spreading the word.
It wouldn't be long before they went knocking on Kulwinda's door then. Panic tightened Nicky's chest. They had to stop the classes. They had to. Otherwise the women were in danger. She was in danger.
I'm not sure if this is a good idea then, Nicky said. We can't shut down the classes now, Nicky, Sheena said. These women have come from all over. Let's go on with the session tonight and then we'll think about what to do later.
The room was silent now. All eyes were fixed on Nicky. Sheena was right. These women had turned up to support the class. She couldn't stand the thought of turning them away and losing all of these new voices.
Who has a story to share?
Hands shot into the air and voices began to overlap. Nicky gestured for quiet. She searched the room. A bony middle-aged woman, wearing a long maroon kurti stretched over black tights, was waving a piece of paper.
My story is incomplete, she confessed when Nicky called on her. I need some help with it. Oh, I'm Amarjot, by the way, she giggled shyly.
Her mannerisms reminded Nicky of her first encounters with Manjeet.
Why don't you start us off, Amarjot?
Nicky said. As Amarjot approached the front of the room, the other women clapped. Amarjot cleared her throat and began.
There was a young, beautiful woman by the name of Rani. She looked like a princess, but she was not treated like this by her parents. Being the youngest daughter of a poor family, Rani had to do all the housework, and she was rarely let out of the house. Many people in her village did not even know she existed.
There was an audible yawn in the back of the room. Amarjot's reading was very slow. She continued describing Rani, her hazel-brown eyes, her fair skin with cheeks you could mistake for apples, her slender waist. Then one day, a man came to ask Rani for her hand in marriage. She stopped here. She stared at her page and then turned to Nicky.
After this, I couldn't find the words. They wouldn't come. I remember what I wanted to say, though.
Say it then, skip to the wedding night, Preetham called out. What did Rani and this man do together?
Anticipatory giggles floated through the room. Amarjot closed her eyes briefly and a smile flashed across her face. She began to laugh. The more vocal women in the room were more than happy to bring the story forward.
He unwound her wedding outfit and laid her on the bed. He took off his clothes, or she took off his clothes for him and touched his body. He had a big one, massive, like a python.
He used it gently, though, because she knew so little. He let her hold it first and move her hands along it.
And then he kissed her, continued Amarjot. She eased at the touch of his lips on hers. As they kissed, he traced his fingers over her body as if he was drawing her. He circled a flat palm over her nipples. They hardened at his touch. He then put his lips to one nipple and began sucking while rolling the other gently between his fingers. Rani was in ecstasy.
But she began moaning a name which wasn't his,
Bibi called out, gasps and murmurs of appreciation.
Whose name was she calling out? No, don't. This Rani was a virtuous girl who was feeling love for the first time. Why ruin it?
Nobody's ruining anything. We're just adding masala, Tanveer said. Their heckling faded into the background for Nikki. She carefully stepped past the women to the desk, where the enrollments list was kept. It would be a good idea to record names and details. Looking through the paperwork, she came across Dharampal's registration form. Nikki couldn't help another wave of panic. Where was 16 Ansel Road on the brothers' canvassing trail?
Maybe they tried it first, but they discovered that he's too large,
Preetam suggested.
So they do it from behind,
another woman said.
Ew!
A few women squealed. Then there was a small and precise lesson in what behind meant.
Not in her bum,
Tanveer said helpfully to their relief.
Oh, why not, though? That's not so bad. It's different. Have you not heard how big this guy's garden pipe is? It's more like a fire hose. Would you really want something that size entering your exit zone?
Where the hell is their ghee?
Somebody asked desperately. The discussion continued. It was finally decided that Rani and her husband would turn their crisis into an exciting adventure. They would try a variety of positions. Spot fires of conversation broke out across the classroom. Casual confessions drifted into earshot.
My husband and I tried that once,
Hardial Kaur sniffed.
It only works if you're very flexible. My knees were too stiff from farm work, even at age 20. Mine tried to put his banana between my breasts once. I don't recommend it. It was like seeing a canoe trying to edge its way through two hillsides.
Amarjot glanced helplessly at the page in her hands.
I think I have to consider this story a bit further, she said.
She returned to her seat.
My tongue will stoke your burning fire, a hot licking flame of pure desire,
boomed a voice from the far left corner of the room. All heads turned to Gurlal Kaur. She was a vision of peaceful meditation, with her legs crossed and her eyes closed. Her words commanded silence. She continued,
You are the suppleness of soil, the strength of stalks. Let me lay atop you, my manhood growing like a root into your velvety soft embrace. When it rains, I feel your slick wetness against my body, and I breathe in your musky scent. We will rock together in a joint rhythm, our fiery passions evoking the strongest thunder and lightning to crack onto this earth.
All that could be heard was the breathing of the women. Nikki was the first to speak.
Did you just make that up?
She asked. Gurlal shook her head. She opened her eyes.
There was a terrible drought in my village the year I was supposed to marry. My parents couldn't afford a dowry, but they knew I wouldn't settle for anyone less than my dear Mukesh Singh, whom I had met once during a bridal viewing and fallen madly in love with. My parents knew I wouldn't be happier with anybody else. They had seen the way our eyes lit up when we first saw each other. You're the one, we both said silently.
That's beautiful, Preetam said. The land was barren, but their love grew.
The other women shushed her.
Each morning and night, special prayers were said for the rain. They were being said in Mukesh's village as well, where the situation was no better. It was from those daily prayers that he became inspired to write
poetry. He sent the poems to my home. I had to be careful to collect them from the mailman before my parents got to them. Although they wouldn't have been able to read the poems anyway. They were both illiterate. That year, my father often grumbled that my schooling had given me too many choices because I was stubbornly insisting on marrying Mukesh. I took out one of the letters and pretended that it was a note from Mukesh's relatives praising my father for raising such an educated daughter. That appeased him. That poem is my favorite.
Do you still remember it?
Asked Sheena. Of course. She drew a breath and closed her eyes again. My beloved, your body is an entire galaxy. Your moles and dimples a sprinkling of stars. I am just a weary desert traveler, my lips parched and searching for refreshment. Each time I am ready to give up, I look up, and there you lay in the stretch of midnight skies. Your hair billows around you, and your hands fall away from your chest, revealing your pale, round breasts. At their tips, your nipples point to greet my puckered lips. I kiss them tenderly and feel the shudder of sensation rock through your body, your world. Between your legs, a flower is moistening itself, its lips plump with anticipation. Your body is an entire galaxy of its own accord. I explore you with my lips, grateful for my thirst to be quenched, and when I reach your forbidden garden, my thirst becomes your hunger. Your long legs are draped around my neck, your hips thrusting against my mouth. My lips become wet with your dew. I press them inside you and feel the throb of your blood pulsing into your most intimate places. How grateful I am to have my lips against yours in this way, to connect these blushing parts of ourselves together. A serene smile gave Gurlal's face an ethereal quality. She dipped her body forward into a modest bow.
Tell us what it was like when you two finally got together. Just as good?
Preetam asked.
Oh, I bet it was. If his hands could spell out such beautiful poetry, imagine what they could do in the bedroom, said Sheena.
It was very good, Gurlal said. He wrote a poem for every single night that we were together. I can recite every single one. The impossibility of this claim bothered none of the ladies. The room was filled with a hallowed silence.
Go on then. Tell us another one, Arvinda urged.
Gurlal opened her eyes and was about to respond when suddenly a visible jolt shot through her. The room filled with a quick rustling. Nikki looked up and felt a stab in her gut from the sight. Kulwinda Kaur was standing in the doorway, her mouth agape. Nikki crossed to the front of the room with a smile plastered onto her face. She couldn't know how much Kulwinda had heard, but excuses were already forming in her mind. Maybe she could convince Kulwinda that the women had been discussing alternate endings to an Indian drama.
I want to see you outside now, Kulwinda hissed.
Nikki followed her into the corridor.
You've just dropped in at an unfortunate time, Nikki began.
Kulwinda held up her hand to silence Nikki.
How long has this been going on? Kulwinda
asked. Nikki looked at her feet. She was about to mumble a reply when Kulwinda spoke again.
To think that I trusted you to lead these women into literacy. All this time you were filling their heads with filth.
Nikki's head jerked up, and she stared Kulwinda straight in the eyes.
The women wanted this. Rubbish, Kulwinda retorted. You've been corrupting this community right under my nose this whole time.
I haven't. Look, many of these women's husbands don't know they're here. Please don't tell them.
I have better things to do with my time than go around poking my nose into other people's lives, Kulwinda said.
She looked past Nikki into the room full of women.
How did you get all of these new women to sign up? What did you tell them?
I didn't have to tell them anything, Nikki replied. Word spreads quickly in this community, as you well know.
The women wanted a place to express themselves.
Express themselves?
Kulwinda retorted, showing Nikki just what she thought of her response. She pushed her way into the room, her palms open in a silent but clear instruction. Give them to me. The few women who had written stories reluctantly handed them over. The majority could give her nothing. The eldest women reacted admirably. They stared at Kulwinda, their lips tightly pressed together, as if to protect their stories from being stolen right from their minds. As Kulwinda's raid continued, women scooted out of the way to create a path for her. She reached the desk.
Where are the rest?
She asked.
In my bag,
Nikki croaked. Her satchel was closed. She couldn't imagine any other circumstance where she would allow somebody to open her bag and search it, as Kulwinda was doing now, her thick fingers extracting the binder like it was a diseased organ. Kulwinda strode out the door and down the hallway, the binder held tightly against her chest. Nikki went after her.
Bibi Kulwinda, please, just let us explain.
Kulwinda stopped walking.
There's nothing to explain, she said.
So much work has gone into these stories, Nikki said.
You have no idea. Please, give them back to us.
She had thought of scanning the pages into a backup copy, but she hadn't got around to it.
You weren't even supposed to be back yet, she accused.
And you thought that as long as I was away, you'd make a mockery of my English classes. Thank goodness I had the sense to check up on you. You've never taken this job seriously.
You advertised for an instructor for a storytelling class. That's what I wanted to do, and that's what the women wanted out of these sessions as well.
Don't you dare blame me for this,
Kulwinda said, pointing her finger inches away from Nikki's face.
I should have known you were going around recruiting women to sabotage my classes and turn them into something corrupt.
The women came on their own, Nikki said.
You were knocking on doors on my street just before I left for India. I saw you.
I only visited Tarampal because I wanted to...
You went to Mrs. Shah's house before that. I saw you from my window.
I got the address wrong, Nikki said. Honestly, I wasn't going around.
That's enough. You're lying to my face now.
Well, it's true.
You can ask Mrs. Shah if you want. The form said 18 Ansell Road, but Tarampal lived on 16 Ansell Road. She had written 16, but the ink was smudged and it looked like 18.
Nikki paused. It didn't sound like the truth. Tarampal did not know how to write her own address.
I don't want to hear any more excuses. You've gambled with my reputation. Do you know what people will say once this gets out? Do you realize how hard it was to ask the men of the board to fund these classes?
Kulwinda asked. Nikki nodded absent-mindedly. Her mind was still on the form. She recalled Jason's story about his mother scrubbing the ink stains from his left hand.
And with so many women joining the classes, did you really think you could hide this from me? How long were you going to...
Bibi Kulwinda, Nikki said.
Don't interrupt me.
Bibi Kulwinda, this is important, Nikki said.
The urgency in her voice must have struck Kulwinda. For a moment she looked concerned.
What is it?
She asked irritably.
Your son-in-law, Juggy, was he left-handed?
What are you talking about?
More importantly, was Maya right-handed? Because...
What on earth are you...
Just please, I know this sounds crazy...
Nikki rushed back into the classroom and returned with Tarampal's registration form.
This is Juggy's handwriting. You could show this to the police and they could compare it to the note. The note was smudged too, wasn't it? Those weren't tears. His hand just brushed the ink and...
Kulwinda snatched the form from Nikki's hands. She didn't even look at it. Her anger made her chest heave up and down.
Who the hell are you to bring my daughter into this?
She asked, her voice suddenly low and frightening.
I know that you're afraid to investigate it, but there might be something here,
Nikki said. She pointed at the registration form.
Just consider it, please. I could go to the police with you. There's evidence.
What happened to Maya has nothing to do with you,
Kulvinda said. You have no right. I have every right if I think an innocent woman was killed and the culprit could be caught. You're trying to change the subject to distract me, Kulvinda said. I won't have you using my classes or the women of this community to carry out your agenda, whatever it may be. I don't have an... Nikki attempted to argue, but Kulwinda's silencing palm had shot up again like a wall. She stared her down. I want you to go back into that room and clear them out. These classes are suspended. You are fired. Chapter 12 Kulwinda marched home against the brisk winds, clutching the folder to her chest. Her rage was in danger of spilling out onto the streets. She wanted to scream, and for a strange moment, she invited thoughts of running into Juggy now. One fiery look would send him scuttling away. She arrived home with wild hair and flushed cheeks. Sarab was in the living room as always, the television lights flickering through the windows. She marched in and commanded his attention with a wave of the folder. Did you know about this? He looked up, the remote control poised as if to pause her. Know about what? The English classes. The other day you said the classes have become very popular. Did you know what was going on? He shrugged and looked down. A movie heroine raced across the screen, her faithful dupatta trailing behind her like a red banner. There has been some talk, sure. The English classes are not what they seem. What are people saying exactly? What are the men saying? You know I don't listen much to idle conversation. There were just a few comments that some wives were becoming more outspoken. They had an entirely new vocabulary to describe... He shrugged and watched the heroine, who was inexplicably wearing a completely different outfit now. Kulwinda took the remote from him and turned off the television. Describe what? She demanded. Their desires, his face flushed. In the bedroom. Why didn't you tell me this? She asked. Kulwinda, he said calmly. Her heart missed a beat. It had been a very long time since he had said her name. When have I been able to tell you anything you don't want to hear? She stared at him in disbelief. Those women's conversations aren't just about their bedroom lives. They told Nikki about Maya. For all I know, they've been discussing it openly for weeks and putting our lives at risk. She hadn't recognized half the women in that room. What versions of the story had they spun, and how would she control it? Do they know something? Sarab asked. The hope in his voice broke Kulwinda's heart. Nikki thinks she has some proof, but it's nothing, Sarab. We shouldn't get our hopes up. As Kulwinda relayed Nikki's discovery about Juggy's handwriting, she remembered the police telling her about the note and its contents. The constable had to brace her fall as she staggered onto a chair. What had the note said? Something about being sorry, something about being ashamed. They're not my daughter's words, Kulwinda had managed to say. My daughter was not concerned about Izzet. When had Maya ever used Punjabi words when an English one would suffice? The writer of the note had been careless and hasty in this imitation of her daughter. Sarab stared and stared. He looked at Kulwinda as if she had materialized suddenly out of thin air. Juggy's left-handed. So what? Kulwinda asked. It doesn't mean... There's something we can do. Will they accept it? Kulwinda asked. Or will they just repeat what they've always said? That Maya was distressed. That it's natural to look for somebody to blame. Then what if the police won't help us and Juggy finds out we've gone to them again? The first time Juggy called in the middle of the night, there were no threats. He simply told her that he and his friends knew what time Sarab left work on his late shifts. The important thing is to stay safe now, she reminded Sarab. Is it? Sarab asked angrily. Are we meant to live our whole lives in fear? He crossed the room and pulled open the living room curtains, exposing the view of Durampal's house across the road.
"Please," Kulwinda said, turning her back on the window. "Close the curtains."
Sarab did as she asked. They sat in the shadows,